Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're listening to Achtung Norwalk, broadcasting from the beautiful South Berlin. Accept no sandwich.
Well, hello, dear listeners. I'm Neil Fisler, and welcome to a very special edition of Acton Millwall to discuss the relaunch of the Lions Trust, which has happened in light of the fan-led review of football governance by Tracy Crouch, MP, which was released towards the end of last year. Basically, we're going to discuss over the next half hour, an hour, the reasons for the relaunch of the Trust and to answer some of the many questions that have popped up on social media and HOF since it was announced the Trust was coming back. Today I'm joined by two guests. I'm joined by the Podfather himself and my Millwall History Show co-host, Nick Hart, who is a temporary chair of the Lions Trust. Hello, Nick.
Good afternoon, Neil. Good afternoon, listeners. This is a very strange experience to be on the other side of the bed, so to speak. Another gentleman's kippers are in my grill.
Yeah, well, this is the ultimate payback for you interviewing me when it I is. Was my book. And we're also joined by a third person, and that is the Lions Trust Secretary, Phil Clark, very well known to many Millwall fans on Twitter, HOF, and probably down the ground as well. Hello, Phil.
Hi, Neil. How are you? I'm not the third person in the bed, thanks. I'll just sleep on the floor if it's all the same with you.
Yeah, no, well, we've got you somewhere else, mate. Don't worry. Yeah, you're part of the pod for being with me in the heart. Anyway, before this descends into chaos, I just want to ask, yeah, well, we'll start off by asking Nick, how did the Lions Trust initially start?
Lions Trust, well, it's been around a long time, and some of the older listeners may remember me chairing it back in the late 2000s and 2010-ish, and we even ran a football tournament at the Den, which was very successful and was very popular, the Lions Trust Cup. I mean, the Supporters Trust idea has been around since probably the turn of the century, 2000, late 1990s. And I'm just looking at the Wikipedia definition, listeners, of what a Supporters Trust is. And it is a formal and, crucial word, democratic, not-for-profit organisation of fans. There are many, many of them across the football scene, and also, interestingly, in the rugby as well, rugby league, rugby union in some cases. And they are, as the definition there implies, they are akin to being a company, a cooperative, whatever you want to call it. It's one member, one vote, with a chair that's elected. And as we've said already, they're not for profit. The Lions Trust has been around for a long time. And if I'm going to be honest with listeners, I think it always rather struggled for a role at Millwall. I mean, there is a website that's been set up. We might touch on that later. And there is a copy of our constitution that's on there, if anyone wants to have a look at that. And it lays out in chapter and verse what the aims of the Lions Trust are. Over time, really the purpose of the Lions Trust evolved, and it may be changing in the light of the Tracy Crouch report that you've mentioned already. But the aim of the Lions Trust, in a sense, was to be, my analogy is a lifeboat, if events turned badly at Millwall, as we've seen at other clubs. Bury is a great example. There are others. If we needed to relaunch Millwall as a kind of a fan-owned concept, as you've seen, most interestingly, actually, at Brentford, who fell into financial problems before their current period of success. They were a fan-owned club. That's normally done by the vehicle of a supporters trust. So that's really been the Lions Trust's primary aim for a long time. We've been very lucky at Millwall. We went through a period of turmoil. Anyone old enough to remember the mid-2000s will remember the period of Peter de Savery. And how many chairmen did we have one season? Was it five chairmen, seven managers? It's complete and utter chaos at the club. And the Lions Trust found a kind of a role then as a potential lifeboat, a fire extinguisher, as Harry was his example the other day, a kind of an insurance policy that if Millwall FC collapsed financially, if for some reason John Berylson's stability was no longer around and we were floundering, we could conceivably use the vehicle of the Lions Trust as a member-driven organisation as a means of a kind of AFC Millwall or something of that kind. So, they've been around a long time, Supporters Trust, but it's a fundamental point is they are member-owned and, democratic. That's their purpose, and that's what we're trying to relaunch at the moment, along with Phil.
Phil, so what happened to the old trust, and why did
Good question. Well, it hasn't really stopped. I just think that over time, as Nick kind of alluded to, the club ended up in incredibly safe hands with John Berylson, probably far safer than anyone foresaw when the trust was set up, which really has resulted in, I guess, the people involved in the trust sort of feeling there wasn't such a purpose to it, just purely because, you know, things were moving along safely. John was putting money into the club, converting his investment into equity, so not leaving great debt in the club, so there's not, you know, huge risk in that sense. But that probably leads us into why now, and I think that really is all about the Crouch Report, to be honest with you. You know, the club is in incredibly safe hands. It's really important to stress that from any conversations we've had with Steve Kavanagh and just, you know, general understanding of where John Berylson's at. So I think really the people involved in the trust just felt that, the purpose and the drive wasn't there any longer. So it's really lied dormant, to be honest with you, Neil. It hasn't stopped. It's just been just dormant, I think.
And you got something to add to that?
Yeah. Just to reiterate, I mean, I was chairman of it from 2006 or seven. I can't remember now, around about then. Until probably about 2015, 2016-ish, when I'll be honest with listeners, I'd kind of had enough of it by then. I wanted to bring somebody else in. I think sometimes with a lot of these kinds of voluntary organisations, there's a major problem, not just at Millwall. I mean, this is a thing that you see in all sorts of areas in life generally, but anything that is politics, whatever you want to look at, it tends to be the same people, same faces that are willing to do stuff. And that's fine to a level, but I was really keen to step away. I'd been chair of it for, 8 years nearly? And I'd had it, you know, I felt I'd brought all that I could to the role. And I was really keen to find somebody else to step into the chair. It's one of the things that we're really keen now while we're relaunching it, is to bring new faces in and maybe new energy, new
fresh blood,
that's a good way to put it. So I stepped away, and we struggled. I mean, as Phil said, the club has been said, it's on field ups and downs, but off the field, with John Berylson being providing the support that he has, which I don't think any of us could have foreseen back then in 2007, certainly not when Peter de Savery was in his pomp. Who would have thought that we'd have such a stable and beneficial owner, and we still do. So that's great. So in a way, that because there was no need for the trust's prime aim as being a lifeboat, as I keep calling it, it became very difficult to motivate people and keep people interested. It fell away. It became dormant. I mean, I stepped away from the role, and I think the trust struggled after that. And it's a shame, because it's a really, really important thing. And I'm pleased now that we are in a position to give it some new energy. We're using mediums like this, podcasting, which now we didn't have then, back in 2007. Social media really helps. You can talk to people far more quickly and easily now than you could even 10 years ago. So I'm really hopeful that we can get this important Mill Supporters organization revived, and whoever we can get to take on the chair will bring some energy, and we now have many, many more ways to communicate with people and get, you know, have a two-way conversation, which I think is probably where, and I believe I fell short back then. And I think that, I think it was one of the problems that we didn't really overcome back then, but I'm hoping we can do so now.
Yeah, I think back then it was only really Hoff and maybe Mizza and Millwall Online that were around then, weren't there? Of course, you did have the medium of fanzines, but they weren't as interactive, were they, as you find now? What with podcasts, Twitter, Facebook, all kinds of those things. So why is having this trust so important to Millwall, Phil, or to Millwall fans?
I think that Millwall were at the forefront of things some time ago, and we had our own fan on the board. We've obviously had two iterations of that, and many clubs have never achieved that. So I think we've been at the forefront of things in that regard. But in terms of your point, there's just this pressing need for more regulation in football. You know, I don't know if people listened to Steve Kavanagh on the Price of Football podcast the other week, where he talked about regulation in football, and clubs seem to struggle to manage themselves. We look around the league at, you know, your Berries and what's happening at Derby. You know, clubs get themselves into all sorts of problems financially, chasing dreams. And there needs to be this lifeboat in place should something happen. You know, if you just look across the other side of London, if there wasn't the supporters' trust at Chelsea, then following their sanction, where would Chelsea be placed? They'd probably have to go into administration, because that's the only other vehicle you could have that would keep the club trading. And that's not a great place to be for any football club. So I think that's why fans should want there to be a trust in place. Clearly, there are other areas that the trust can agree. If you read some of the detail around the Crouch Report, which I'm sure we'll touch on, there could be other criteria that the club and the trust have to reach agreement on. There'll be various items in there that the club can agree with the fan group, be it shirt colour, badges, relocation, a whole load of things which I'm sure we'll touch on later on. So, you know, if you care about the club and those things are important to you, then it's definitely a really good reason to have a trust in place.
This is something actually which I think, well, we might as well touch upon this fairly early on, is will the trust be independent from the club, Nick? I think that's a worry that a lot of fans have had, certainly stuff that I've read. Will the trust be a puppet of Steve Kavanagh, Billy Taylor, people like that, as some fans fear?
The trust, the Lions Trust, is independent of Millwall Football Club. It's registered at Companies House. Because it's classed as something called a community benefit society, which I don't want to overdo the kind of legalistic part of it. But if you think of it, listeners, as a company, but a not-for-profit company, you've probably got a fair grasp on what it is. So it exists already and has existed since 2002. Actually, it hasn't gone away. Just touching on an earlier point about the whether it's a new trust or not, it's the same one as ever was there. So it is independent. It has its own money. It doesn't take any funds other than from what it generates from member fees. We'll come back to that, because we're thinking about how we're going to handle that. But when we did the Lions Trust Cup, for example, we generated funds that we primarily gave to charity, and it does have the trust does have need of funds to pay for its registration with the Financial Conduct Authority. I always get these names mixed up. Listeners, Financial Conduct Authority, FCA, And we are looking to bring our paperwork up to speed so we can rejoin the FCA and also the Football Supporters Association, which used to be called Supporters Direct back in the past. But to answer anyone's queries, I mean, I'm happy on Twitter to take any direct questions from anybody, but it is independent. I think that's a really important point. It always was independent. It is independent now. And I mean, would it be the point you made about would it be the club's puppet is an interesting one, because it is the, how can I put this, that the trust is the product and the collective of its membership and its chairman or chairperson, I suppose. I should be woke, I should call it, shouldn't I? Its chair. So if you're unhappy with the way that that chairperson is conducting things, if you think that maybe the point you've just made there, Neil, that maybe it's not being critical if that's required of the club, and you want to replace that, then a vote is taken. You can call the chair is there at the with the support of the membership. So yes, it is totally democratic in its principles. And, you know, if you're unhappy with the way that it behaves or what it says or what it does or whatever you like, really, and or if you don't like the policies or the opinions of the chair, then you can change that because you have a direct link between the support of the members and the board. I'm hoping that's answered that question, but it exists already as an independent body. So it is not linked to Millwall Football Club in any way, shape or form. Did you want to add anything to that, Phil? Do you think that's a fair summary of the situation?
Yeah, I think it's a fair summary. Yeah, I think this question always comes up, whether it's about supporter groups or trusts, and I suspect it comes up at every club. Everybody wants these groups to be independent, which they rightly should be. But also, I think sometimes there's a bit of a misunderstanding that being independent doesn't mean that you constantly just stick it to the club just because you're independent. You know, being independent means that sometimes you have to be harmonious because you have to get things done. Things aren't achieved solely by, you know, beating the club up at every step of the way. So, you know, the people involved in the trust moving forward will have to build good relationships with members of the club. That obviously can be seen as cozying up, but the reality is that's how things get done. That's not to say that if things aren't right, then members of the trust or a supporters group should be prepared to hold the club to account on those things on behalf of their membership.
Yeah, well, I think one of the points levelled at the Millwall Supporters Club is that they are too close to the club and there's a deep distrust of them. So is the trust independent of the Millwall Supporters Club?
Yes, Nick? Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I'm just looking at the actual constitution, which is on the website, listeners, which is... I don't know if you still say www. I do because I'm old, but it's the lionstrust.org on the internet. If you go on there, you can bring up a PDF file of the Lions Trust Constitution. So it's independent of Millwall Football Club. It's independent of anything. It exists in its own right. And this was drawn up in 2002. I do believe, and we're looking at with the FSA, Football Supporters Association, that they have a more modernised version of a constitution. But this is what we've got now, so this is what we're working with, 2002-2003 version. But the objects of the society, as it's called, is to increase and improve communication between the club, in a nutshell. It had the purpose to acquire shares in Millwall FC. That's largely been superseded over time with John Berylson's arrival, because the mill share structure over that time has changed from the old Reg Burr 40,000-odd shareholders into fundamentally John Berylson owning the vast majority of shares. So we've got communication, improving communication, acquiring shares such as you can, to promote support for the club and encourage new supporters, regardless of their age, sex, origin and place of residence, to ensure that the club continues to play football in the area. So you could take that to mean South East London, I guess, but anyway, in the area, to strengthen bonds between the club and community, encourage a more public perception of the club. I think we failed on that, haven't we? More positive public perception of the club. and to promote the principle of supporter representation on the board. So those are its, I mean, those are all worthy aims, and I don't think there's any fan that would disagree with any of those purposes. I'm not going to contrast it with the Mill Supporters Club because it's a different thing and it's had its own history. And I do know, you know, some of the people on the board of the MSC, and they're good Mill fans. And I'm not going to get embroiled in, you know, this being some kind of have a go at the MSC. I don't see there's any value in that. But the Lions Trust is a different thing to the MSC. It has those aims I've just read out. It also has evolved the underlying aim of being a potential vehicle for a fan-owned club if that were ever to be needed. Thankfully, it never has been. Hopefully, it never will be. And now we've got the arrival of the Crouch Report, which may give supporters trusts like the Lions Trust a legal right of veto over certain identity issues that Phil's touched on already. So it's a really important thing. And as I've said already, I'm just glad that it's acquiring some new life. I'm hoping that with our online presence and this show, that we're going to encourage people to take an interest in it and hopefully take on some of these roles. Because it's like a lifeboat, Neil. It's, you know, I said this on the other day when I was speaking to the boys on the show. You want to, if you get on a cruise liner, you don't necessarily want to get in the lifeboat, but you do if the ship sinks. And it's that's its prime purpose. And potentially, in a similar vein, the golden share veto idea gives the supporters an ability to control the club's identity. So you don't get a Cardiff City being turned out in all red, whole Tigers rather than whole city, and other similar things across that we've seen across football where money gets involved. I've waffled on. I'm hoping I've answered that question. Have I missed any points out there, Neil?
Just one thing I would like to pick Phil up on, actually, or we'll ask Phil, and it was something that was mentioned on Hoff quite a lot. I don't want to turn this into a MSC bashing exercise, but there are genuine concerns, I think, amongst some of the fan base. Can a member of the MSC committee be a member of the Lions Trust committee as well?
Okay, good question.
Is that helpful?
Good question. The truth is that it's a democratic organisation in the same way that you could be, if you were in the union world, you could be a member of two different unions. There's nothing to stop people joining in the same way that if we had IMSA or AMS, you could be a member of AMS and IMSA and a member of the MSC. And if you then chose to stand for election, you could do, provided you got enough votes. Whether the membership would want to vote for somebody that was on three different committees would be interesting, because clearly you're really dividing your time. And I'd say, you know, again, you know, people on the MSC, I don't particularly, I know one or two of them, but not, you know, greatly, to be fair. I would be very surprised if they'd want to put themselves in that position, bearing in mind kind of the amount of grief they've probably taken over the last two or three years with the MSC. So is it possible that they could stand? Yes. My personal preference would be that the trust gendered enough new members that we introduced some fresh and new blood into the group, because we all want the trust to have the best possible chance to start its life with everybody's support and not shrouded in the politics that we're kind of already seeing in the sort of line of questioning from Jeremy Paxman. I think it's difficult to block people. You know, it would be incredibly undemocratic to do that. The simple fact is, get enough people to join. If people want to stand for election, that's their choice, and the membership get the right to vote for who they want. And it's a bit like politics in this country. You're going to get the people that you deserve. If you don't bother to join and don't bother to vote, then that's kind of the risk. You know, I don't think Nick or I would feel comfortable changing the constitution to deliberately block certain people. If you do that, what happens if no one else stands?
It's very true. But I think from a credibility point of view, that if you want a clear distinction between the Lions Trust and the MSC. You can't have a crossover on the committee. I think there was something Nick wanted to add there.
Yeah, no, I'm going to sound like I'm back in the trade union room arguing my case in the hearings and panels that I used to sit in on. I don't mean to, listeners, honestly, but I've just on Phil's point, I've just been flicking through the rules, the constitution, which is what guides the trust. And these rules are not our rules; these are ones that were drawn up by Supporters Direct, a government organisation. But anyway, number 9 says that membership of the Lions Trust, put that in, membership of the Trust is open to any person, firm or corporate body who or which are a supporter of the club or has an interest in the game of football in the area and is in sympathy with the society and agrees to be bound by its rules. So you with my trade union hand, you'd be hard pushed to bar anyone because you don't particularly like or your perception of who they might represent doesn't fit in with your own. The answer, as with anything in this life, whether it be politics or anything else, is if you don't take part, as Phil's just touched on, then you can't complain at the outcome that you see if you haven't either put your own name forward or supported somebody that you do think could do a good job. You certainly can't bar anyone, and that would be a problem if anyone out there is expecting somehow for us to say these can't join, only a certain type of Millwall fan can, because the rules don't allow that, and to be quite frank. And I mean, Phil said it already, and I couldn't support anyone that wanted to go down that road. But what I can say is if it's open to anybody. So, you know, I think the problem that you have often with many, many voluntary organisations, politics, as I keep saying, is that if people don't take part, then you can't complain at the people that do, because you have to, sometimes someone somewhere has got to put their head above the parapet. And, you know, sometimes it can get a bit hairy being a Millwall name or face. You know, we all read the same things. We all see the same issues online, and sometimes you might find yourself not having to agree with people, and it can be a bit heated. But you do need, we are this organization, the Lions Trust, is A, very important, B, needs good quality people to take control of it and hopefully steer it wisely. The rules are what they are. But I think as Phil's touched on already, I think we're looking for new blood and hopefully people that are comfortable in this kind of, I wouldn't call it, it's not really a boardroom situation, Phil, is it? This is just like it's a fairly straightforward company, not-for-profit company style framework. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd agree with that. I think, you know, supporters groups typically will be challenging the club about, I don't know, price of pasties, how many fruit packets of fruit pastels are in stock, the beer, all the usual fan-related matter. The trust generally is probably going to have 4 or 5 meetings a year with the club, probably maximum, and they're going to be more like, I wouldn't say board meetings, but it's going to be more on set agendas. So the roles really would suit people that have had some form of business experience, just so that they have a broader understanding of just some of the matters that will come up in that environment. You know, it's not going to be like a fans forum, for example. I think that's the really key thing.
And I guess a lot of this would depend upon if the Crouch recommendation goes forward into law, I guess.
Yes and no. I mean, it doesn't need to go forward into law, though, to be fair. I mean, we'll probably come on to it later. You know, the conversations we've had with Steve Kavanagh when we contacted him to let him know we were doing this, which is obviously the right thing for us to do. You know, that's not us colluding with the club. That's just being open and honest. Steve's really, really keen to do this. You know, people who want to criticise the MSC have to realise there is only one supporters group at the club. So when the club interacts with the MSC, they don't have any choice because there isn't anyone else. So, you know, they have to communicate with somebody. And the great thing is that the trust will give the club another avenue to support with to communicate with a different group of supporters on different matters. And one of the things that came out in the Price of Football podcast, which again, you know, I'd really encourage people to listen to. Steve was on there for maybe 20, 30 minutes. You know, the club are exploring the shadow board route, irrespective of the legislation on the Crouch report. So I think there'll be plenty of room for the MSC and other supporter groups to interface with the club and for the trust to do its own kind of very narrow work, because it is relatively narrow in terms of its scope, without too much crossover. But, you know, in truth, if people who are members of, you know, the trust want to be members of the MSC and vice versa, I think crossover of membership is fairly natural and to be encouraged.
Phil, can I just pick you up on one point there? And it might be a point that some people might be unaware of, but what exactly is a shadow board?
Okay, so one of the recommendations in the Crouch report is to create a shadow board. So that would be a non-executive board. So you wouldn't be registered at Companies House or any of those things, but basically it would be a board made up of various different parties that represent different aspects of Millwall, that would have regular communication and meetings with elected officials at Millwall, be that, you know, the main board or even John Berylson or Steve Kavanagh, whoever, you know, they decree. So, for example, you may have on there representation from the supporter groups. You could have representation, well, you would have representation on there from the trust, definitely. It could include representation from, say, fans under the age of 30. It could have representation on there from
the Junior Lions, the Mental Health Trust.
Yeah, the inclusivity and diversity group. It could be a shadow board, maybe of, I don't know, 6 to 10 different seats, effectively representing different aspects of the club. Could include a social media group, for example, that encompassed all of the online and the podcast and so forth. I mean, that is something that the club would own, and then they would kind of seek people for that. But there would clearly have to be representation on there from official supporter groups, which would naturally be the MSC, and the trust would be on there as well. So, and that's where it does get tricky if you had crossover of cross-pollination, for want of another expression, in terms of committee members, which is one reason why I'd be really keen to avoid that. But the shadow ball would be a really great thing. Steve seems to be really behind it based on what I heard on the podcast. So I think, you know, there's something really positive to look forward to, because there's no doubt in all of our minds that relationships and communications between club and fans can always get better, regardless of what stage we're at the moment. It can always be better.
So when are we actually looking at elections, Nick?
We are gathering members at the moment, and by members I mean we're asking people to email us with an email address, and I believe certainly a name and an email address. I don't think we're asking for mobile phone numbers, but we have about 140 plus responses so far. We are bringing our paperwork together. I spoke to the third part of the triangle at the top of the Lions Trust is our treasurer, Steve Jones, who's not with us for this conversation. But I spoke to Steve earlier on. He's working with the FCA and the Football Supporters Association to bring the paperwork up to speed, because as we've said already, the trust became dormant. So
it needs to be updated and
dealing with the Financial Conduct Authority, apparently I've never dealt with them. I don't think I ever do want to deal with them in my life. Apparently it's a very slow and picky process. So Steve is going to be working with the FSA. I keep too many F acronyms here.
Association, basically.
So we've got 140 odd inverted commas members at the moment. And the reason I put inverted commas around it is that at some point in the near future, I'm being a little bit vague and I apologise to listeners, we want to see if we have any potential chair, man, woman, person, whatever other word
we want. Or will anybody else who's got a pronoun? after their name.
Every other pronoun.
So we all don't get cancelled.
We're hoping. I've had a contact already, but I want to see if we can get at least two potential candidates, because to have a decent ballot, you need at least two choices, in my opinion. So we're working on that at the moment. I would like to bring this to a head reasonably soon, because without playing violins in the back of this podcast, listeners, I don't want to temporarily chair this for too long for reasons of health. And Neil's doing a violin move on. I don't want to do it for health reasons. I'm not going to go down that road. Anyone who's followed the podcast knows that I'm under medical instructions not to load myself up with any more stress than being a Millwall fan actually gives you. So we're looking for decent quality committee members and a decent quality chair as well, that we can then offer up to the membership to take a vote on. And that person will then command the support of their members, as to put it, and they can take this thing forwards.
The end of the season? Sometime
I would hope the end of the season. That's my view. I mean, whether we can get the paperwork tied up, then I don't know, to be absolutely open. I think in a way that will be the least of our worries. Phil might disagree with me on this. That's something that can be worked upon, because that's registration with the FSA and just the Financial Conduct Authority, he says with a throwaway tone. I think the sooner we can get, I'll pass over to Phil to see if he agrees with me, but the sooner we can get a membership together that we can then organise an election around and candidates, the better. I'd like to aim for the end of the season, Neil. Whether that's going to be possible or not, I don't know. It depends on who contacts us. Part of the reason for doing this show today.
Before the start of next season.
I'd hope so. Yeah, if we have a candidate candidates, I'd like to get the ball rolling on it over the summertime, as soon as we can get it going, to be honest.
Phil, have you got anything to add on the potential timetable?
No, I mean, you know, it. That's the ideal scenario, is to get it wrapped up before the end of the season. I think Steve, Nick and I, see ourselves very much in temporary positions. And I think for the integrity of the trust, the ideal scenario is that we get a new committee in place and none of the three of us need to stand for election to fill holes, for want of an expression, because that kind of demonstrates for me, A, it's democratic, and B, it's integrity, by the fact that we've kind of got involved, hopefully, you know, got things back afloat and tidied up, and then a new committee is elected by its membership and it takes its own direction. And as Nick says, you know, once there's a new committee in place, they may choose to instigate the football tournaments again, they may choose to do other charity events, you know, there's all sorts of things that they can get involved with as a trust if they choose to do so. So it can be as large or as small as the membership and the committee want it to be.
So basically, who will get a vote in these elections?
There's an interesting point. Go on, Phil, you take this one.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, look, the process, it ties into the process. So as Nick said, we've got the website there where people can put their details in. I think it does ask for contact number, email address, location and name, just so that we've got some basic detail about people. Once we move the administration side along, there'll be a application form for a membership, which again, legally we have to do because it's constituted. So you have to have a membership form, which I think can be done online. There needs to be a membership fee, because effectively by joining the membership of a society, you have to pay a membership fee, which gives you one share in that society. So if we had 1,000 members, there'd be 1,000 shares. Each person has one each and so forth. And it's one member, one vote, like every constitutional society would be. So in theory, you know, it's pretty straightforward. I think we can get all of that together in terms of the voting. Anyone who is a paid member of the society will be entitled to a vote. Nick and I have looked at some online voting software that was recommended to us, so we can make it really easy for people. You know, there's not necessarily a need for everyone to trundle up to Harry's Bar at 5 o'clock in August to say aye or nay. You know, we should, in theory, be able to do a lot of this online, which makes things a lot easier. So really, you know, I can't say it enough times. I just really want to encourage as many people as possible who care about the club to get involved. It's not really going to cost you a great deal of money or time. The more membership we've got, then the better chance there is of more people that will stand for election. More people that stand for election means a stronger committee moving forward. It's as simple as that.
Go on, next. Sorry.
No, I'm just going to say that Phil and I had an interesting conversation the other night with a lady from the Football Supporters Association. And I had some vague floating around in my head legal knowledge from donkeys years ago when I did a housing qualification. And she reinforced it. So I was so pleased that my vague knowledge of the law, contract law, was correct. That you, in order to cast a vote in this election, you have to have parted with some money. And the minimum that you have to part with is a pound. And I don't feel comfortable. I think Phil's the same. I don't feel comfortable asking for much more than the pound as a membership fee at the moment. That could change. The new chair could come in and decide to go back to the traditional membership, which is £10 a year traditionally, and I think that's what maybe other trusts charge more. But to get this going, I wouldn't want to go much further than the pound just to be able to cast a vote in the first election, and then it'll be whatever the new board decide they want to do for the future or as an annual membership fee for the trust. It could carry on as one, it could carry on as five or ten or whatever people want to do. So when we organise the election, we'll come back to all of our email contacts, our members. We might be asking for a pound off you to cast a vote. Up to you whether you want to pay that or not. But I thought a pound seems to be such a minimal amount that even at Millwall, we couldn't get any objection for a packet of fruit pastels as a potential vote in an election. But I'm sure something will have something to say. More news on that as soon as we can get it organised, I think.
You know, that brings me quite nicely on to my next point, which was going to be how much is a membership fee. And a pound, I don't think you can really argue with. And it's a base to build from, isn't it? You get, you said 140 people. What was the last membership figure that you...
When the last time that I remember seeing a membership list, and I'm going back a long time here, listeners, I'm going to go back to certainly about 10 years ago, last time I saw it. Because it was fading and no one was a member of it, and we didn't have the ease with which now we can communicate. So that was, I don't even have the old membership lists, which I think was one of the other points that may have been made on the message boards. We had about, I think by the end of it, maybe if we had 20 people by the end of it, I'd be surprised. It may even have been less than that, Neil. It was very hard to maintain interest in an organisation that didn't seem to have any obvious purpose. And I think it's a struggle for a lot of supporters trusts, unless you've got a crisis, unless you've got some reason to be a member of it, that you get something out of it. It's quite hard to sell it as an idea. I'm hoping now with the legislation, and I was quite interested last week. I think I said on one of the other shows, I was listening to Prime Minister's Question Time about a week ago. And one of the questions in the House of Commons to Boris Johnson was about football. And he actually hinted that he wants to see he certainly wanted to see the regulator of football come in, which was a major part of the Tracy Crouch report, the football independent regulator, stood up and said that in the House of Commons. So I get a sense that clubs, maybe Millwall, certainly others you see around, I've been following the Chelsea, trusts, statements on their situation at the moment. But I think a lot of clubs want to get in front of this. So the golden share, the veto over the identity, the club colours and badge and name could well be implemented by a lot of clubs, irrespective of any legislation that may or may not be passed. So I think we just need to be ready for that. It's a really important responsibility for us as a trust. We need, as Mill fans, we need to be ready to take that. And that's why we've set the website up. That's why we're doing this show today, to try to get across to people how important this is.
So I pay my pound, I get my vote. What happens to that money, basically?
That's a good question. Go on, Phil, you go.
I think that at the moment the trust in theory, it doesn't need funds.
No.
You know, the trust has, Steve will be able to confirm when we've updated the FCA accounts, but, you know, the trust has several thousand pounds in its bank account from previous, so, you know, it's not in desperate need of funds, but you have to charge a membership fee, as we've discussed legally, so, you know, you have to have some form of income. What the trust chooses to do with that income will be down to the new committee, and it could be that it is used for, you know, football tournaments and charity events like that. Clearly, there will be some legal costs involved, whether that's just auditing or advisory services. My personal feeling is that longer term, the trust needs to build up a reasonable fund of money in the event that something went wrong at the club. They've actually got some money to finance decent legal advice and support. You know, you're not talking hundreds of thousands of pounds, but certainly maybe, you know, 10, 20, 30,000 pounds it should have in its bank account at some stage in the future, just as an example, for that eventuality. And the only real way you're going to generate that is either through membership or hosting events. They could do quiz nights or whatever the committee choose is the right way to do it. Some clubs will use their funds to buy shares in their club. You know, that's happened at other clubs. It's not going to happen at Millwall, in my opinion. I can't see, you know, and you probably couldn't afford it, quite frankly. You know, trust John's, I suspect he owns maybe 96-97% of the club. You know, I can't see him. To buy shares in the club, you've got to buy them off of somebody, and the only person really who owns them is John and, you know, a couple of members on the board, and, you know, they're not going to sell them, and if they did sell them, they're not going to sell them at a figure that the trust could afford to buy. So, I hope that answers the question as best I can.
Yeah, well, I guess that if there is a solicitor listening to this who's a Millwall fan, or even an accountant that's a Millwall fan and they want to come forward and offer their services in that kind of thing way, I guess that you'd be pretty happy to hear from them.
Absolutely. I mean, we have had contact from a legal company already. We have Millwall fans in all sorts of places, listeners. And so we do have some contacts on that front. As Phil has said, you do need some money in the bank. There's actually about 7,000 in the bank from the past, and that money would have been generated from the Lions Trust Cup, really, because membership hasn't been charged for a long time, one way and the other. The £1 idea, I mean, I haven't discussed this with anyone, listeners, so this is me. This is why I've never made a good committee man, because I just go off on my own tangents and make suggestions that I think are brilliant and no one else often agrees.
Your own tangents on podcasts, Harlan.
but for this occasion, if we charged £1 a vote, so to speak, to get a vote, you could give that money to a good cause. Take your pick. There's lots of good causes out there on this occasion. We don't need any money right here, right now, for the trust to function. There are fees to be paid for the FCA, the FSA, I dare say, companies' house charges. I'm not that experienced on that front. So there will be costs, to for those bits and pieces, but that's covered for the time being. So for the immediate purposes of an election of a new chairman, you could charge £1 and maybe once we've got that money rolled up, give it to the Mizzen Fund, give it to the food bank, give it to something of that kind. That's what I would like to see happen. To take that forwards longer term, as Phil has said, I mean, trusts take many forms. I mean, we've, for the most part of Millwall, it's always been a fairly quiet in the background kind of body, and it probably will remain there, but trusts in other clubs do take a much more active day by day role. They generate funds, they organize football tournaments, quizzes, social events, you name it, always for the purpose of, you know, assisting their club or for some wider good cause. And that's what I'd love to see happen with the Lions Trust, because I think it's you know, none of us on this show, all the listeners out there know how generous Millwall fans are when you give them the right event and for the right good cause. And that's what I'd just love to see more of that kind of thing going on, because that's really what the Trust should be about. And I'm hoping we'll get that.
Right. So I think we've virtually touched upon an awful lot here, but something I want to go back to is the golden share, which is something that I've seen in Tracy Crouch's report, but I'm pretty unsure what it exactly is. So, Nick, tell us what the golden share is.
Yeah, it's a strange name for a fairly easy concept, actually. I don't know, the golden share is a great name for what is effectively a veto. We've seen with Cardiff City, was it Vincent Tan who came in as the new owner of Cardiff City a few years ago?
That's right.
And decided to change their club colours away from blue to lucky red. He's from the Far East, and that red there is seen as a lucky colour. And the red dragon
was also something to do with the Welsh, as I think, as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The Welsh rugby shirts. Red.
It was a misreading of the club's identity, a misreading of the fan base there. And you've seen it at Hull City. I can't think for the life of me the name of the owner up there. He wanted to change the...
It was a lamb, wasn't it?
He wanted to change it from Hull City to Hull Tigers. And also we've seen on a form of dramatic level when Wimbledon FC, as it was, wanted to relocate to Milton Keynes and become the Milton Keynes Dons. Completely, applying that franchise idea that you can pick a club up and move it totally out of its area to a totally different place, and that's fine, you know. So the golden share is a legal veto that can be given to a properly organized, legally organized supporters trust, such as the Lions Trust that we're talking about this afternoon, and it would give that body the right to say no to certain fundamental aspects of a club's identity. And speaking from memory, I think it's club colours, club name, badge. If they wanted to change our badge away from the Roaring Lion to a kind of a, I don't know, Laughing Lion or something, I don't know. Or if they wanted to move the club away from completely from South East London to where could
the heartlands of Kent.
Or Plymouth. I could take you to Plymouth. But it's to protect the fundamental parts of Millwall's identity. The Supporters Trust, the Lions Trust would hold what is an effective veto, and it's called the Golden Share. I prefer the name veto personally, because I think it's clearer, but it's called a Golden Share.
That's Phil, did you have something to add on that?
If people do want to find us on Twitter at the Lions Trust, I've put a PDF on there the other day, just with some sort of notes that I put together on the golden share from various different bits and pieces that I've pulled together from the time we've been looking at this. So that's definitely a useful resource for people to have a look at. I kind of echo what Nick's saying, really. I mean, technically, every organisation is made up of has to be made up of shares, be it 100 shares or whatever, and you can have one shareholder or 100, whatever. But the golden share in itself is a symbolic share. It's not necessarily a physical share. It's not like John Berylson's going to say, here you are, Lions Trust, here's one share. It's a symbolic share, but that share will have certain rights attached to it as set out in the club's articles of association. So typically the holder of that golden share, which we believe will be the Lions Trust, and we're assured it will be, in Millwall, will be able to outvote all other shares in certain specified circumstances. So we can't outvote John on everything, but there will be certain things that will be pre-agreed or will be agreed with the club in their articles of association that will allow the trust to effectively veto it. So it's not that the golden share itself is a veto, but it gives the holder of the golden share the right to veto. So if that makes sense, is that kind of helpful?
Yeah, I think it's quite safe to say that John's been around for quite a long time and hasn't really done anything stupid yet. So I can't see him wanting to relocate the club to the Kent or somewhere like that, or to change the badge or the name or anything else that's going to offend people. But, well, it is a good safety net, isn't it?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It's, sorry, Nick. Yeah, it is a safety net, and there's nothing to say in 3 years' time, the trust is just bumbling along, club's doing well, and I don't know, John decides to sell the business, you know, effectively. We've got no idea what may happen in the future. But the point is, if the trust is in place and the trust has those agreed criteria in its articles of association, anyone who then subsequently owns the club is still committed to them and has bought the club on that basis. So that's why it's really important to have them in place while we've got a really engaged and great owner that believes this is the right thing to do.
So what other rights could be granted to fans in relation to the club?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, at the moment, the Crouch report, which is seen as quite radical, you know, it's rocked the football world, isn't it? I mean, there's a huge public relations exercise going on, driven by the Premier League, to try to soften some of the some of the proposals, particularly the regulatory ones, which obviously I don't want to be controlled by an independent regulator. I'm quite interested to see, just been following the Chelsea story, but the Chelsea Trust were asking the government to impose, as part of the conditions of sale in the departure of Abramovich to whichever consortium takes on Chelsea FC, but to ask that the requirement to have a golden share, and they have a Chelsea Pitch Owners Association there, which is also part of the Stamford Bridge, ownership. But they wanted that to be written into the terms of the sale. So certainly the golden share, the identity stuff that we've just mentioned, the Chelsea Trust is asking for the government to impose that on whichever group buys Chelsea. I don't know that there's more. I'm not aware of any more areas that you could campaign on to get more rights. I mean, certainly, historically, one of the things with the Lions Trust was that it was seen, when it first set up, it was seen as the method by which, by buying shares at Millwall, it could press to have a fan on the board. That happened separately. Peter de Savary actually was the first to allow that. And we had Peter Garston to sit on the board for many, many years. So Millwall's always been quite out there in terms of, of these kind of fan developments. I think that the way forward for the trust is, A, to get as many members as possible. That's number one. To get a good quality committee, if we can find them. One that wants to work with the club to promote the interest of the support, to organise stuff, social events, as we've said already, and to make it such a positive part of Millwall life that it's just seen as an essential part of the day when you go to Millwall. And I think that road lies a great future for the Lions Trust and for Millwall FC, actually, because as we've seen on many other occasions, when the club and the fans are as one, then that's when we're at our best. And that's what I hope the Lions Trust can be part of.
I feel you wanted to add something.
Yeah, I think what you've got to bear in mind is that in theory, the Trust could ask the club for the right to veto on literally anything. The Trust could ask the club for the right to veto on the next manager. It could ask for the right to veto on having no betting companies ever as a shirt sponsor. It could ask for all of these things, but you've got to bear in mind the club have to agree to it and the board have to agree to it. And some of those things commercially won't be practical. Some of those things just may not be realistic. But for example, you could, in theory, some of the other trusts have requested that a fan was appointed to the board, which clearly we've been down that road, so we know about that. It could be that if it was a private company, certain financial information would be shared publicly or shared with the trust and the supporter groups. It could be if the club had an audit or risk committee that you had a seat on that. It could be various fan engagement responsibilities or roles. It literally could be anything. The Crouch Report just touches on what they call heritage assets, such as the colours, the name, location and stuff like that. But, you know, it literally, you know, you could say, well, you know, we want the right to veto, you know, what colour the rusty stanchions are outside the ground when they're repainted. You know, it could be any of those things. Some of them the board will have no issue agreeing to, and we'll see that there's sense. Some of them they might say, well, you know, we do understand and we agree, but it's not practical for us to give you the right to veto. For example, if we said, if the trust requested of the club, we'd like the right to veto any new incoming owner, you know, if they've got, you know, hidden assets or any of these things, you know, that logistically, you know, or logically makes sense. But, you know, John might not want the right for somebody else to veto his right to sell a club he's invested £120 million in.
Yeah, but there is the fit and proper persons test, which can veto that.
So. Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. There's lots of things that can interfere with those things. But you have to understand that, you know, there's a commercial aspect to the club's perspective, and the trust might have a golden share and might have 300 members, but there's also somebody that's invested 110, 120, 130 million pound in the club. So, you know, you have to respect that sort of balance as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think we have to be realistic in what we're asking, I think, is what you're saying. No,
absolutely.
I think a veto over a manager or over...
I was just going to say, I would have vetoed Steve Lomas.
It would be pie in the sky, really, wouldn't it? That's basically.
Yeah, exactly. But that's what I'm trying to say. You could ask for anything, but clearly there's going to be certain things that will be agreeable and certain things that won't.
Would you like to see the next chairman of the Lions Trust have a seat on the main club board? And have that discussed with the club?
It hasn't been discussed, to my knowledge. Sorry,
well,
Phil.
It kind of has, in the sense that if it's going to be independent, it couldn't have a seat on the board. So no, I don't think it's. I think that's why it would be. That is why you would have a seat on the shadow board. The minute the Lions Trust has a seat on the club's board, the question of independence is already answered, because it can't be independent. Because if they're effectively registered as a director of the club, then they've got fiduciary duties to the club, but also they'll have commercial duties to the club. Things will be discussed at board meetings that quite clearly that person will be conflicted in sharing with a wider community. So it'll be a red line. And I think that's kind of why in the end fan on the board roles get very, very difficult, because one minute kind of you're in the stands, you're with your mates that you've been with for 20, 30 years at football. Next thing, you kind of got all the inside detail on absolutely everything at the club, which you quite clearly can't share with anybody, but everybody wants to know, and it just becomes very conflicted, I think, for the individual.
Just something that has just come into my mind. What happens if Nick, Phil and Steve want to step away and there aren't enough people to fill those roles? Doesn't the Lions Trust die a death on its feet again?
That's why you're doing the pod, Neil. We've co-opted you in already without your...
I wouldn't want that to happen again.
Yeah, it was just a thought that came into my mind when we were talking.
I mean, I don't really want to do this. And one, part of the reason that I don't want to do this, obviously I've mentioned one reason already. I'm not going to go back to that. I think it's just really important. I mean, my face has been around a long time doing stuff and I don't mind, but it's really important that we get new faces. I think that's one of the great failings, if you like, of Millwall fan groups generally. It tends to be the same people. I remember on House of Fun years ago, someone said, why is it always the same people that do these things? And I replied back, well, why don't you get involved then? Because that would be someone new. But you don't. I would love for there to be new blood and new energy, because no one person. These groups are for everybody. They don't belong to any one single person. Just going back to the point you made, Neil, about the fan on the board. I've just reread the Lions Trust's rules, constitution, whatever you want to call it. And one of the points there, which is handwritten, is to encourage and promote the principle of supporter representation on the board of any company owning or controlling the club, and ultimately to be the vehicle for democratic election to the board. So I think it reinforces Phil's point that you wouldn't want the chairman of the Lions Trust to sit on the board, but that the Lions Trust would encourage that principle that a fan would be on the board.
So you wouldn't
want the two for the clash of interest that Phil's pointed out. But the principle is there in its in the trust rules. But no, I just think it's really important to send out the appeal today, A, for members, secondly for, we hope, good quality candidates. If we reach that point that you just made there, Neil, about nobody coming forwards, we'd cross that bridge when it comes. I think the trust is too important to let it become dormant again. But no, I think it's important that we have somebody else doing this if we can achieve that.
Right. So I think we've been going for nearly an hour and probably bored people to death.
If you're still listening, well done.
Yeah, well, that's if we've got anybody still listening to us. So how can people get involved? We'll start to wrap this up now, Phil.
Right. Well, first thing, you can find us online at www.thelionstrust.org. We're on Twitter, which is at The Lions Trust, or you can get in touch with us via email, which is secretary@thelionstrust.org or chairman@thelionstrust.org. Is it chair@thelionstrust.org, Nick, at your email? I can't remember now.
Chair@thelionstrust.org.
We're being inclusive, so I think it's chair@thelionstrust.org. So you can get in touch via those mediums. My Twitter handle, I think, is at Phil Clark with an E, 0170. And everybody knows Nick's already because he is the podfather. So you can get in touch with us and we can direct you in the right places there. I think it just, I can't reiterate any more about how important it is to get, you know, more and more people involved. It's really, for me, it's really important that the people who are involved in the trust today are allowed to step away, not because we want to, but for the integrity of it. It needs a committee that's voted by the members rather than just the only people standing.
Yeah, I agree.
Right, and I think that's quite a good point to actually wrap up on. Thank you very much to Nick and Phil. And, of course, all of the links will be in the show description. And we look forward to speaking to you all soon. Come on, you Lions.
Thank you for listening to Aston Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. Arrivederci, Millwall. Till next time.
Who do you want to watch?
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.